Before you recruit someone to fill that next opening in your organization, I've got a resource that you should definitely check out.
Welcome to the podcast with your host, Craig T. Owens. Craig's new book, When Sheep Bite, is available now at craigtowens.com.
The resource comes from a good friend of mine named Jim Wiegand, who wrote a book called Recruiting to Releasing. Now, any organization leader, whether it's a church, a nonprofit organization, a for-profit business, we are always looking to recruit people, recruit talent to put in these positions. Jim has a different way of looking at this. He said, instead of recruiting people, we should be releasing people that we already have into positions that utilize the skills that God has placed in them. I had a chance to sit down with Jim and talk about his book. Check this out. Well, Jim, I'm really glad to be able to have this opportunity to talk with you. I got the book, started reading, couldn't stop reading, just kept going through it, and was really fascinated by it because, you know, any pastor or any maybe a ministry leader of like a nonprofit organization, it seems like we're in this constant churn all the time of got to recruit people for different positions. And you have completely flipped that on its head because you said stop recruiting and start releasing. Can you tell us a little bit about where did this idea first dawn on you?
You know, it's funny. This we stumbled on this as God, you know, lets people find gold nuggets in rivers, I guess. I was a youth pastor. Someone had made a comment that my ministry was to develop their ministry. It wasn't to build a big youth group. It was to build big kids that became, you know, faithful adults. And so I started asking them questions about their future and saying, so 10 years from now, you know, I run into you at the mall, back when we used to believe there would be malls 10 years from now. And I said, you know, how are you? And he says, Jim, I'm living the life of my dreams. I made it. I'm there. What would that be like? Tell me what that is. And I was shocked that about 80% of the kids had no idea. I was even more shocked when I became a senior pastor that 80% of their parents have no idea what they want to be when they grow up and they're 40, 50, 60 years old. And they've lived a life that was what they were supposed to do. They went to school because they were told to go to school. They got a job because they were told to get a job. They married the girl they loved because they were told to marry. They had babies because that was expectation. But it's funny, there's an epidemic in America today, according to the latest statistics, about satisfaction and purpose, meaning and purpose are the two words. They found out that 57%, so almost 6 out of 10, think about how can I get more meaning, more purpose into my life on a daily, weekly, or monthly basis. 57%. It is an epidemic of a sense of meaninglessness with all the get more likes and more clicks and root for this team and vote for this party. In the middle of all that nonsense, there's people going, I just don't know who I'm supposed to be. So we started asking those kids questions that made very long conversations into much more efficient conversations. And now through the last 35 years, having this conversation now over 100,000 times with individuals, with groups online, through the books, having it, realizing that it really doesn't need to be that complicated to get people headed in a direction that's filled with purpose. And I believe that's one of the key roles for pastors is not just to lead them to Jesus, but then to lead them to themselves. Who did God make them to be? So we got it from a bunch of kids on a ski retreat. That's where we got it from. That was our purpose of our ski retreat was to talk about what we wanted to be when we grew up. And that was in 1993. So ever since.
And what I love about it is that it's this change of mindset. Instead of saying to somebody, hey, here's an opening. Would you pray about going into that opening? You're really saying to them, where do you think that you fit best? And then you're releasing them into that ministry.
Yeah. And I think, and boy, I want to say this kindly because I'm not a corrector. This isn't a corrective word. But if we get people to do what we need them to do, so our church can continue to grow, so we feel a sense of satisfaction, we're using people. We're not utilizing them. We're using them. So when people leave the church and no one calls and no one writes and no one cares, it's because what we cared about is what you did, not who you are. And that's a problem. There are people that are leaving the church every day. They're not coming back. And one of the reasons is because I felt used. I gave because they told me to give. I served because they told me to serve. I showed up because they told me to show up. I blowed up because they told me to blow it up. And now I'm gone and they just seem to find 3 more people to take my place. I feel used by that ministry. And the reason they feel used is because they were used, not purposely placed and utilized. So this is something I maybe it's good for everybody to know, but I haven't hired anybody off a resume in 17 years. We have 5 campuses now. We're, I don't know how many people go to the church and there's various expressions and things. We have not hired anybody outside of Freedom Center Church in Fenton, Michigan in 17 years. So all of that leadership and all of those locations have all been won and discipled here or discipled here. Not all of them are one, but one and or discipled here for Christ. And that's because we talk about this stuff. So I have people that were children in ministry now being my children's ministers. I have people that were youth in youth ministry. They're now my youth ministers at various locations. And this is why, because we discover who people are and then we turn them loose. If I say I need 5 more mammals, anybody that can fog a mirror, go to the nursery. We need 5 people and they go there. That's good. But I owe them a favor for that. Yes. Yep. Now, if I buy them coffee and discover they love kids and I release them into that nursery, I don't owe them a favor. In some ways, they owe me a favor because I didn't use them. I discovered them. Yep. And I helped them prepare. I trained them. I associated them or introduced them with teams of people that also love that group, that kid, that music, that whatever it is. They discipled each other in those groups within the church. And they became like family or closer than family most of the time. So I really think that this thought of purpose, meaning, it's an epidemic because 57% of us think about it on a regular basis. 78% of pastors, what is the number one most commonly talked about need in the church today? They say leaders and workers. We can't find leaders and workers. I'm telling you, your church is full of leaders and workers, right? But you're asking them to work in the nursery and they'd rather work in the accounting department. Or you want them to work in the accounting department and they'd rather be an usher. You're asking them to be on the security team. And the last thing they want to think about is guns and criminals. They do that all week because they teach junior high school. Now they want to think about, you know, altar work. So this is a terrible thing to say, but I do mean it. People who study 20 hours a week for a 30-minute message, I get that. You were taught that. That's wonderful. But let's say you study 15 hours a week and the other 5 hours, you took people out to coffee and you asked them questions that unlocked what they were doing, what their purpose was for God. And then you put them in environments where they could be discipled in those purposes and then released to be those things. No one can name 5 sermons that changed your life. Everybody can name 5 people that changed your life.
Right.
My goal is to help pastors and disciplers and elders and parents be the people that are on people's 5 people that changed my life list. And so we have a series of questions. We teach people to have a wonderful conversation. And from that conversation, thousands and thousands and thousands of lives have been changed.
Well, and let's talk about those questions for a second, because I like how you've broken it down to 3 main questions and you're trying to find like that sweet spot in the middle. Yeah. One of them you ask people what's their passion, and another one is what's their proficiency. Mm-hmm. But there's a third P that kind of got me when I first read it, and it's what's your pain?
What's your pain?
I don't think a lot of times people think about discovering your purpose because there's something that's painful. Can you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, I don't know why. Once you're sensitized to this, you'll look for it. Anytime somebody talks about purpose, they'll talk about passion every time. They'll talk about proficiency about half the time. 0 people talk about pain. I have no idea why that is. Pain is the superpower that unlocks the amazing things of the kingdom of God. When Jesus does miracles, especially in the Gospel of Mark, often before he raises the dead, heals the sick, cleanses a leper, casts out demons, preaches the gospel of the kingdom, he's moved with compassion. And that word compassion means a churning of the bowels. It's a, I can feel that. You ever see a kid like fall and you can't, and they hit the, and you hear that head like someone just dropped a coconut in the frozen food aisle at VG's. You know what I mean? It's just like, you feel it. Believe it or not, that pain that is not yours, but you feel in someone else is an unleashing power of the kingdom of God. So think about it this way, that, you know, Nehemiah was moved to do what he did because he heard a story about the condition of Jerusalem. Gates have been burned with fire. Walls have been torn down. Those who live there are in great disgrace. Now, the guy who told him that just takes off, goes for a walk. He goes on his way. Nehemiah finds his way because his purpose was to do something about that. So that engaged pain, now he tears his clothes. He puts on ashes. He doesn't eat for days. He stands before the king sad, which was a capital offense. But in essence, he's saying, I would rather die than to live with this pain and having done nothing about it. That's where heroes come from. I'm a veteran. And all the things they train you to do in the military, there's never once been a grenade jumping drill. Now, if a grenade comes in your foxhole, step one, grab the lowest ranking private that no one likes. You know, step two, apply said private to grenade. Step three, you know, hold your breath and tighten your core. Here we go. You know, and boom, and he turns into pink vapor like that. But ever since the invention of the hand grenade, somebody's jumped on a grenade for their buddies. Why is that? Well, that's pain. That's not passion. If you're passionate, you'll join the military. If you're in pain, you'll jump on a grenade to save your buddies. And I think probably the greatest example of this, it might help people that they're watching or listening, that, you know, somebody falls through the ice, some junior high school kid, it's always a junior high school, it's always a boy, falls through the ice, spring or fall, and you hear that kid screaming, and you know he's got minutes before he goes under and he's not coming up again. And there's no time. You have to do something about this. Think about how binary that choice is. You either break through the ice yourself, being heavier than the kid that broke through it, risking your life in an attempt to rescue him, or step B, the other option, is you walk away and you get to hear that kid's screams for the rest of your life, knowing you did nothing about it. That's the power of Nehemiah's pain, Moses's pain, Paul's pain. Woe to me if I preach not the gospel. You know what I mean? Jesus's pain, for God so loved the world that he sent his son, because the thought of eternity without people there was unthinkable. So he did the unimaginable. He jumps on the grenade of the consequences of our sin to save everybody in the foxhole. But this is what happens. Now, all of a sudden, Diana Lewis, Channel 7 News, puts the microphone right underneath your face because you saved that kid. You say, you're a hero. Watch what they do. Anytime someone's called a hero, they'll either look away, which is a sign of avoidance. Like, I'm not connecting with that. I can't even look you in the eye anymore. Or they look down, which is a sign of shame. Why they're looking away and why they're looking down? Because only they know that pain really didn't give them a choice.
Right.
They didn't. Well, there was step C, just call 911. There wasn't a 911. Right. You had to either risk your life to save that kid or walk away. And believe it or not, risking your life was easier than walking away. And that's the power of pain. The greatest things we'll ever do, we'll do because of pain. And I could talk about this all day long, and I probably will, but what made the Good Samaritan good was not his pedigree.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he wasn't a Levite, but what made him good was not his education. He wasn't a priest. He wasn't even a good person socially. What made him good was when he came to the place where the man was, instead of going on the other side of the road, he was moved with compassion, or the NIV says pity, and he went to him and he bandaged him up and he marinated him like a piece of steak for a barbecue, and he throws him on his donkey and he takes him, you know, covered in oil and wine, whatever that does therapeutically, I don't know, but it probably made him smell better than what he smelled like, at least, right? So yeah. What's he doing? He took a need that wasn't his, but he felt, and he did something about it. If we're leading people and we're saying passion, 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 passion always cools. Passion always matures. Pain does not. Pain is pain. As long as there's one person that's on the outside, man, it'll kill you. You'll think about them. You'll pray over your food and you'll see hungry kids. You'll pray about your kids and you'll see kids that don't have a parent like you. You'll think about a life that you get to live, and you'll see people living in that, just the squalor of the American dream, and go, man, I wish I could do something about it. That's the power of pain.
And when you pick up a copy of Recruiting to Releasing, Jim has got laid out in every chapter. It's not just the one question of those kind of three circles, but there's multiple questions. So the book will really help you have some dialogue, have some conversation with some other people, not just ask one set question out there. So that's what I really loved about it. But one final thing I wanted to ask you, we've kind of talked about this in the church setting. Yeah. But talk a little bit about, because my background, I have a business background. Talk about a Christian business owner that really views their business as their ministry as well. How could they use the principles in your book, the concepts you've shared here, to help even in a for-profit setting?
So we teach this in for-profit. We teach this in the church, and we teach this in the public schools. Believe it or not, the public schools in our area allow us to come in, talk about God, talk about purpose. Mm-hmm. We have to be constitutional in our language, creator and creation's God, or creation and creation's God, that sort of language. So, but they allow us to do that. And what we found is this is universal. So here's a great example of what I want to say. At Tim Hortons, the local coffee joint at Starbucks, there was a barista, a kid that worked at Tim Hortons, and I noticed that she was gone one day. They just opened the Starbucks. I went across the street to Starbucks and she was there. I said, hey, I know you. You're the Tim Hortons girl. I used to get my burrito and my coffee from you every morning. I'm here to pick up my wife's iced tea because she likes $5 glasses of dirty water. I don't get it, but it's she's from the South, so it's important to her, and she's important to me. I said, did you get a big raise? She said, no, actually, I didn't. I got a cut in pay. I said, then this is an important moment for me because I study people. why is it better for you to work on this side of the street, making less money than that side of the street, making more money? She said, because I wasn't in it for the money. Over here, I'm a barista. Over here, I'm an artist. Over here, I'm part of a movement. Over here, I'm part of a culture. And that means more to me than the 50 cents an hour that I was making at Tim Hortons, where I was just a kid working fast food. Now I'm somebody doing something that's affecting the world. Now, let's be honest. She's pouring coffee here. She's pouring coffee there. But here is connected to deeper purpose. If I owned a business today, and I own two of them, but I'm the sole proprietor and so forth. But if people were working for me, I would never hire somebody unless they saw what I saw that made me want to do it. I couldn't. It's too menial to organize this or mail that or email them back or answer this phone call or this request. That they have to believe what I believe. People really don't care what you're doing until what you're doing is more important than what they're doing. So what's the vision of the company? Are you selling water softeners? Are you telling people if you don't have a water filtration system on your drinking water, then your liver is the filter and it's ending people's lives prematurely. People are dying of cancers and diseases and PFAS chemicals. And well, I'm a salesman in both ways, but one, I'm actually caring about the person I'm selling to. There's a cause that I believe in. There's a product that solves a problem that I'm passionate about, that relieves a pain, that I'm good at. It's a very different job. If you can sell a chiclet, you can sell a bicycle. If you can sell a bicycle, you can sell a car. If you can sell a car, you can sell a house. You can sell a house, you can sell a high rise. Salesmen are salesmen, right? Workers are workers. But if there's a reason to make less money, and let's go back to the people I've hired in the last 17 years, the average cut in pay that we all take when we come here is 50% cut in pay. We make 50% less doing for Jesus what we used to do for Starbucks or the world or selling floor coverings or whatever it is. So why is it worth that? It's because the purpose for which we're doing it, the king and the kingdom, the church, the body, it's not a better work environment. We deal with stress here just like they deal with stress there. We deal with money here just like they deal with money there. They have a difficult boss here just like they have a difficult boss there. No different. The difference is I feel more connected to why I'm created here than I did selling floor coverings or painting in the family business or being a farmer or being in sales, all the things they used to do. Can I also say this? We had one guy who was a wonderful, brilliant children's pastor, one of the best, if not the best children's pastor we've had in the last 29 years with us. And he quit the ministry to start a car lot. Because as he answered those questions about what's your passion, what's your pain, what's your proficiency, those things morphed over time. His kids were now out of that children's ministry. He really had this bite for business. He really wanted to do that. So, but if you buy a car from Family Used Cars in Fenton, Michigan, before you leave the lot, Les or one of his staff will pray with you. They'll ask, would you mind if I just pray over you in this car before you go? They've led people to Jesus. They've prayed for healing. They've given vehicles away because a family couldn't pass the credit rating. So they just gave it away. Now, if you sold cars, would you rather work for him? Or would you rather work for somebody that's like your goal, your number, your quota? Like the purpose of that is kingdom versus the purpose of that is profit. People will work for a lot less money if there's purpose associated with it than they will for a lot of money. People do not, achieving wealth is not purpose. It really isn't. People that have money commit suicide at the same rate as people who are poor. They're depressed at a higher rate. Their marriages fail at a higher rate than people who are poor. So if you're looking for purpose in life, if you're one of the 6 out of 10 Americans almost that are looking for greater purpose, don't look for money. Look for what's your passion? What's your pain? What's your proficiency? And when we're due and sparing no expense using all the technical abilities of my, you know, passion, pain, proficiency, where do those circles overlap?
Yep.
That may be where you're supposed to live. Yep. And if you are, how can I, as a friend, as a pastor, as a coach, help you find your way to that? How can this book help you find your way to that? Because if I can help you find that, you found something Jesus called not just life, but abundant life, right? Life that overflows into other areas, other people, other places. So that's the purpose of the book, is helping people, whether it's secular or kingdom. I don't think there is anything. If you're a believer, it's all sacred. There's no secular work. But absolutely, as a boss, an owner, a manager, how can you help people? Then, you know, how many cups of coffee do you pour before you've changed somebody's life? That's not the right question. It's, again, how many sermons, you know, can somebody name that I've preached? I don't want to be on the 5 sermons list. I want to be on the 5 people that changed my life list. Same thing as a manager. How many tasks have you assigned that changed somebody's life? So the goal is not to give them meaningful tasks. It's to be a meaningful person in their life, to help them discover who they are, what God put them on the earth to do. And man, I'll tell you this in closing, there's no better paycheck than seeing somebody live that life. That is, as far as I'm concerned, that is That is the reason why I get to do what I get to do, is to watch people go, I get it. I'm supposed to be a veterinarian. I get it. I'm supposed to be a housewife. Everybody told me I needed more than that. But all they wanted to be is a housewife and a mommy. And, you know, or they started nonprofits for sex trafficked kids that cost millions of dollars. And, you know, have been a fantastic series of setbacks and delays and frustrations. And yet she is there helping kids today, or become youth pastors that thought they're going to be missionaries, or children's pastors that now are running car lots. It doesn't matter. Help people find who God made them to be. That is the most rewarding life I have ever found personally. I think that's where my passion, pain, and proficiency probably overlap. One of the reasons I'm a pastor.
Well, I love the idea of making this change of, like, you don't have to, this is not what you have to do, but it's what you get to do, because that's the way that God created you to be his unique masterpiece in his plan. So thanks for this book. It really, I love how accessible it was. The questions are so easy for me as a leader, for me to remember, and then be able to use them with other people. And then I just love the way that you lay all that out. So please, friends, if you haven't yet, whether you're a leader and you're leading an organization, or if you just want to dive into purpose ideas on your own, pick up a copy of Jim's book today. This book certainly got the wheels turning for me. I've been thinking about things in a much different way now, and I hope it will do the same for you as well. I've shared links below, but please pick up a copy of Jim's book. It's available on Amazon or Apple Books. Get your copy today.
Craig's new book, When Sheep Bite, is available now. To order, go to craigtowens.com.